Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Pete Murray is one of Australia's most enduring and endearing singer-songwriters. He is a multi-platinum selling artist who has sold over 1.2 million albums, released 3 ARIA chart-topping albums, and boasts 17 ARIA Award nominations, amongst multiple other wins and nominations over the years. Emerging with his debut full-length album, The Game, in 2001, Murray's breakout sophomore album, Feeler, in 2003, cemented his status as one of the all-time greats. With ongoing hits along the way, including Better Days, Feeler, Opportunity, and So Beautiful, Pete's stirring blend of positivity with acoustic rock and folk elements has flourished across decades, including with his most recent full-length album, Camacho, in 2017. Pete has cultivated a stalwart reputation for his live show, from his own headline shows at home and abroad, as well as performances with the likes of Missy Higgins, Icehouse, Rob Thomas, James Blunt, to name a mere few. In 2024, Pete has returned to releasing music as an entirely independent artist, releasing his new single, Wouldn't It Be Good? He released his latest offering, I Am Fire, in 2025, and in the same year, he embarks on his largest tour ever. The extensive solo acoustic tour will see him visit a stack of markets he has never been to, rolling through every pocket of Australia, with a whopping 55 shows lined up across regional Australia, as well as capital cities. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Pete Murray. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm at home in Byron Bay. And I'm great. Very good, actually.
Straight away, let's rewind. At what age, whether it was a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this music creative world. And how did that journey progress?
I was quite late getting into music. So I didn't pick a guitar up until I was late 21 or early 22. And I had never thought about music. My whole life was kind of like sport. You know, I was into athletics and rugby and swimming and I was studying some natural medicine, so for me, I was going to be working with sportsmen and women. For me, that was kind of my future, you know. And then I had a friend of mine who I was living with at the time just came into my room and said, I'm going to go get a guitar lesson. I've always wanted to do it, and I'm going to do it. So, you know, he was super excited, and I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. I've never ever thought about doing that. So turns out that I actually went and had a couple lessons, and he never did, but he got me started.
Was it a surprise for you that you flowed into that so naturally?
Yeah, I guess it was a passion that I didn't realize I had until I started playing. It didn't come along too easily. I mean, you don't just pick up a guitar and just come naturally good. It takes a bit of time to get the hang of. So for a while there, I just kind of was really intrigued by how do I play this thing? So that was the first thing about learning how the art of playing it, and then also learning how to sing to it, so I could do a bunch of cover songs that I always wanted to do. So, you know, that was really where I was at with music, and it just kind of took off. I think once I started to learn to sing a bit, I was just playing in my room a lot and didn't want anyone to come in and see me because I was happy to kind of keep playing. And, you know, it was great to get out and play to a couple of people at first and just sort of get a bit of feedback on what they thought.
Did you always know that you could sing, or was that something that you picked up when you started playing and learning guitar?
I hadn't thought about it too much, but I remember once I started playing and my voice was kind of sounding okay. You know, I remember years ago when we were kids, my sister and a couple of friends, we used to put the headphones on and sing a song. So then, you know, people with the raw voice. And we were all killing ourselves laughing at each other. And then I had a go and my sister was like, everyone stopped laughing. They were like, oh, actually, you're pretty good at this. So that's my only memory of that. But I only thought about that later once I started to play music because I didn't really sort of think about it again. But I've always been fairly good at singing in key and, you know, keeping in tune, I guess.
And what was the transition? So you learned guitar, you learned singing. How did that then become professional?
Well, it didn't happen quickly. You know, I was, like I said, 20, 21, 22 when I first started. I was kind of, I went, traveled overseas for a while, and it was then I started to sort of just learn a bit more about the guitar, learning off buskers and different guys that I met jamming with them as I was overseas. So the next stage was the important thing, because this is all luck. My whole story is luck, really, how it happened. Someone coming into my room going, I want to get a guitar lesson, and then me going, yeah, that sounds great, I'll do that. But I'm a big believer in fate, so I believe these things were meant to happen. So my mate Charlie, who got me into that one, who got me to go have a guitar lesson at first, sadly passed away a couple of years later of an aneurysm. But I, like I said, I believe I was meant to meet him. The next thing that happened, I was overseas traveling, just happy singing cover songs. And I remember being in a hotel room in an apartment with a 2-bedroom apartment with 19 other Aussies when we're living there for, you know, backpacking. No one had any money. And one of my mates was playing some original songs, and I was playing a cover. He'd play an original, I'd play a cover. And one of the girls there said, oh, just play us one of your songs that you've written. And I was like, oh, I don't write songs. And she said, oh, why not? It's like, oh, I don't know. And she said, well, you should. And I was like, okay, I will. So at that moment, I was like, okay, well, maybe I should try to start to write some songs. So for the rest of that backpacking time overseas, I started to do a little bit of writing, songwriting. And then I came back to Australia, and on the way home, I penned some lyrics for the song Bail Me Out, which came out on the Feeler album. And that was the first time I kind of just wrote lyrics. And when I came home, I wrote the music to it. And that was really, that song was about me coming home, being scared. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, because I'd sort of changed so much being overseas that the natural medicine studies was something that I wasn't really sure I wanted to do anymore. I was trying to find this job that could take me overseas and travel the world and get paid for it, but I didn't know what that was. And music still wasn't that job. That was just kind of fun. You know, I started to express myself a lot more with those feelings that I was having, and that's how the songs kind of came about, a lot of the songs.
When you started writing songs, did it come easy to you? And how has the creative process changed over time?
It didn't come easy for me at first. And I remember when I made that decision, I remember I ended up getting a gig in a local bar, small, had maybe 100 people maximum could fit in there, a little tiny bar. That after, look, a mate of mine had heard me play some covers. He said, mate, you should go get paid for this because you're actually pretty good. So I went and had this one gig. It was called Tom's Place at Dooley's Bar. It was an Irish bar in Brisbane. And I used to go there and play on a Friday night. And that was it for me. I was kind of, I liked that. I remember getting into that for a while and thinking, you know, like this is really, I wanted to do my own stuff. So the decision that I made to go full time, I'm going to write during the day and I'll do some whatever work I can get. You know, I'll do some more gigs and different things that I can do to sort of keep the money coming in. But I was really focused on doing music. And the day I made that decision, I remember expecting to write a song that first day. It's like, hang on, this isn't working. I was very frustrated. Trying to not understand that, hang on, this takes a bit of time. You don't just write a song like that, a good song anyway. So it took me a while, and then I was really spent a lot of my time then, you know, focusing on songwriting. So that next 12 months to 2 years, I was just really focused on writing songs. And I wrote a bunch of songs that end up on the first album, Feeler, that are, I guess, considered classics today. But that time that I really focused on writing those songs was really worthwhile for me.
How did then that next step build up to you then start traveling around the world and performing?
22, I started. By the time I got to 29, 30, I'd recorded my first independent album. Now, that's considered pretty late in the music business. Recorded that, and then that came out, you know, when I was 30, 31, you know, and I remember doing an interview with someone and they said to me, like, you know, what are your thoughts on what they think in the music industry? If you haven't made it by the time you're 24, you're never going to make it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's bullshit. I mean, it comes down to a good song, doesn't it? Like, if it's a good song, it's a good song. Yeah. I just didn't really think about, well, you know, you've got to be a certain age. Like, so I didn't think about that. But for me, there was a passion there and I wanted to write the songs and I believed in them. And I kind of just thought, you know, if a good song is a good song, people will listen to it and people will talk about it and people will share it. And that's kind of what happened. You know, the music was, I was talked about, and it spread that way. And then, you know, obviously when you hit the commercial radio, you don't just write a song and put on commercial radio.
Yeah,
it's a long time. So, you know, like I said, there's a whole groundswell that happens of any artist where they're starting to get that bit of success. And then, you know, back in the day there, and if you have that commercial success, same as on streaming now, it's still the same. It's commercial success. If you put something on the streaming, it goes viral and people like it, it's commercially successful. And that's, it takes a long time to get to that stage, mostly. Some people are lucky, I guess, if they do that. But, you know, talking about longevity, I think you want to have a career that takes a bit of time. Most cases, it's pretty rare that someone comes out and has a one-hit wonder straight away and they have a long career. So it's something that you've got to work towards, and you've got to have that catalogue, I think, good catalogue of songs that people can really get into rather than just like a one-hit.
When you actually started becoming commercially successful and having built up and gotten into that space, were there any aspects of that part of the career that was a surprise to you? That was like, oh, I didn't realize that this is part of it. Or was it just like building up over time and you just got into those next steps?
I was an independent artist for a long time. Then I ended up doing a major label deal. But once things started to sort of, once it became a bit more popular and a bit more groundswell, then I had to make the decision, do I go with this major label or do I stay independent? And independent, I was very comfortable, but the money wasn't great. You know, it was pretty difficult. So, and you're sort of only so far you can go back in those days when you're really relying on either in this country, you're relying on indie stations like Triple J or you commercial. There's nothing in between those.
Okay.
So if it was like, okay, if I go with this major label, then I'm giving these guys, if I can give them the right music, then I'm giving them every chance to make this as big as they can possibly make it. But there was a fear with that. You know, I remember being nervous that, hey, my face and my image is going to be, could be up on big posters around the place. And that kind of scared me a little bit. I just wasn't quite ready for that to happen, you know. And I think once it started to happen and being on TV and things like that, you know, people sort of noticing you was very different to when people didn't notice you.
So is that a combination, a little bit of imposter syndrome, but also now that you're being seen and being noticed and being, you know, looked at, it's now, okay, now I have to be accountable. I have to show up. I have to pitch up. I have to keep creating. Is it a combination of all those elements?
I didn't feel that. I've always done music for me, you know.
Okay.
For the enjoyment. So I didn't feel the pressure to write for someone else. That's why I always sort of stuck true to with what I do and be true to myself. And I think you're going to have the best chance of being happy with your music. If you start to do something, oh, well, I've got to, this is, the whole thing's moving this way now, and this is really popular, so let me follow that. Everyone does that whole thing. I don't want to be everyone else. You're like, you got to stay in your own lane and do what you do and do that job, you know, and that's what I like. So the minute that I start to try and write a song to try and please other people, people aren't going to follow me anymore because it's like, that's not my music.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to write like, and you just hope that people come along with you for the ride. But, you know, some people stay and some people go, and that's just what it is. And, you know, a career, as you know, will kind of do this. That's how it works, you know. And at least as long as it's doing that. What you don't want is it to, you know.
Yes.
So if this is happening, then you're still going, okay, it's you know, I've always said it's hard to have success in music, but it's even harder to have a career. So the career is the big thing, is what you want to try to have.
And at the moment, are you still with the record label or are you independent?
I'm back to being independent again. Still have a great relationship with those guys. They were really good for me here in this country, in Australia, and I'm very, very grateful for their time and what they did for me. So we still have a great relationship. The last couple of EPs I put out, I licensed through them. So we still have a great relationship there. But the new music I'm putting out now is independent. And, yeah, it feels nice to be going back to where I first started. Because I started as an independent artist and the first album was independent, and it's nice to have that. I don't know, just to be an independent artist again, you know, it's you're doing things for yourself.
Do you feel being an independent artist gives you more not that you don't have motivation when you're with a label, but it gives you more motivation because you do more things and more control of things and understand the different points compared to the record label now taking ownership, or maybe the marketing taking ownership of that. Do you feel that it brings more balance and control into your space and more power?
Well, it depends how successful you are with the power. I mean, if you're not getting success, you probably don't have the power. But the thing is, you know, it's more of a business decision for me to go independent, because the owning your own music and owning your own catalog, what the thing is that, you know, everything I've done with the record label, they own that music. They paid for it. They own it. So, and that's just what it is. So for me now, going back to owning my music, I think most artists, you want to own that recording. You want to own that master copy, because that's where your future income can come from and your family's income. You know, the day I pass on, that's going to go to my family. So really, this was a business decision on my part to make sure that that I do this the right way. And if every bit of effort that I put into this, then I'll get the majority back.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month because for me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the listening from song one to whatever number, that whole experience. I'm unsure if you're aware, but physicals are a massive comeback around the world. Last year, a vinyl factory reopened in Asia that had been closed for 50 years. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. Now, naturally, there needs to be high exchanges on a daily basis for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in this basket. Vinyls have been there for the longest time. Again, vinyls on an upsales of 5.9 million sales in the UK last year, the biggest since 1990. But then we've got streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the situation of the industry at the moment?
I love CDs.
Yeah, me too. Yes.
I love them. And I'm like you. I love having the artwork. I love reading all, you know, the credits of who did what. And that, for me, I grew up like that. And I remember when CDs came out. I mean, I remember having some tapes years ago when I was younger. But CDs, just the quality was just so good, you know. And, you know, if you want to skip tracks or do what you want to do, it's just easy to go on. I love that. And the quality's fantastic. Vinyl, I have a record player, but I don't play vinyl as much. The quality of vinyl is beautiful, really nice and warm. But the thing that annoys me about vinyl is you got to turn it over at halftime. It's like playing a game, isn't it? Okay, have a break and go and turn it over. But I love CDs. But also, I think DSPs are pretty amazing too. You can sit and you can just skip whatever and play whatever you want. So the quality is not quite as nice, but if you've got a good sound system, you know, it's hard to tell the difference really. So the good thing for artists, independent artists, if you are selling vinyl and CDs, that's where you can live off your money if you're not earning money on shows. And a lot of acts don't make money from their shows. They live off their merchandise. They live off the CDs and the vinyl and the T-shirts. And that's what people don't know sometimes. So it's a really important thing to, if people are at those gigs, it really is important to buy the music and support that independent artist anyway, if that's what it is. The streaming platforms, you know, the beauty of that now is it's international. You know, people can listen to you anywhere around the world. And I remember being caught up in with the label, where the label in Australia owned me, but well, internationally they owned me, but the Australian company owned me here, but internationally they didn't care about you. So back in the day when, you know, you'd want to get released over there and people could, if they couldn't listen to it, there's no way you could get over there and do anything. So I got stuck in that. And I had really no release other than in Holland. And Holland was really good and great and successful. But everywhere else, no one wanted to do anything with the label. And no one else can help you because they don't release you. So you get stuck. And that's the only thing that I don't like about labels.
Yeah.
Like I said, the Australian company was great. But the other interest in the other labels, they just didn't care. So independently now, I have the option to go wherever I want, you know, and that's up to me how I want to try and do that. And the beauty of the streaming is that, you know, through all social media and stuff now, you can actually have a database. You can start to let people know where you're going and they can listen to your music wherever you are, wherever they are. So that's the beauty of the streaming.
What's coming up next?
Well, I've got a new album that's coming out in October, and it's my first independent album since my original independent album back in 2001. So that's kind of pretty nice. There'll be a number of singles coming off that. And I'm also about to do my very first acoustic solo tour in Australia ever, doing, and my also my largest tour. So I'm doing 55 dates in this country.
Oh, wow.
So it's a massive tour. And it just, it's going back to the basic, the roots of where I, you know, wrote songs. So people will get to experience just myself and acoustic guitar, the way that I wrote these songs years ago. And people love that stuff. There'll be some stories of, you know, what's happened over the years and different things that I can talk about with the songs and different things I've experienced. So I'm looking forward to that. It's kind of also pretty daunting because that's a lot of dates.
And what do you enjoy about performing live?
I love all aspects of music, you know, recording, songwriting. But playing live, you just get such a buzz, especially, I guess, at my level now, where people know the songs, people sing the lyrics back to me. You can see the amount of joy they get from the songs, how the feeling that they get from these songs when they sing them. And it's just, it's really, it feels great to me that that fan base is really getting something out of these songs, and it's so passionate to them. And whether it takes them back in time to a certain moment or whatever it is, or it reminds them of someone who's passed on, or I don't know, it's like so many, or it's helped them through a hard time. There's so many things that these songs have helped people out or inspired them to do. And I'm very big on kind of having a positive message in a lot of the songs. And, you know, whether you're going through a hard time, knowing you're always going to get through that and you're going to move on, just inspiring people to sort of to achieve things. So there's a, you know, big catalogue there of songs, and especially on this tour, it's going to be, I'm kind of excited just to go back and dig into the songs and work out what I'm going to play.
When it comes to that, choosing which songs, is that something easy, or is it like, oh, should I play this? Should I play that? How do you work that out?
Every tour is different. You know, when you're with a band, it's kind of, you can only do so many songs. Unless you've got a long time, it's a big tour, you've got a long time to rehearse, and the guys get across a lot of songs. So normally I'll do, you know, say 20 or 21 or two songs, so that the guys have got enough there. If we're playing a set, which can be up to like 17 songs a set, you've got a few that you can sub in and out to change it up a little bit. The beauty of being solo is I can learn a whole bunch of songs myself. I don't have to rely on the other guys to learn them. So I can just go, you know, if someone yells something out of the crowd, it's like, okay, let me have a crack at that one. If I don't, you know, so sometimes you don't learn all the songs, but you've got a pretty good idea of how to do it. So for me, I can do a lot of different things at different nights. The set list should change a little bit. But majority of the old sort of classic songs, you know, they're going to be in the sets. People want to hear those songs, and people are going to want to sing along to them and hear stories about them. But other than that, really it's up to me whatever else goes into the set.
Okay, so I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 5 minutes, 5 years, I know your answer will be different every time. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five artists once you finish this conversation, and if you could think of specific songs of those artists, cool. If not, who would those five artists be, and what would those songs be if you could think of songs?
I'd just look at probably five of my top artists. So like, if I go back to the original days and the guys that inspired me, there would be Neil Young and Bob Dylan. I love the folk music they did, and I love the band music they did. Bob Dylan, and once again, these guys got the catalog so big. One of my favorite songs of Bob's is, I think it's Positive 4th Street. I think that's what it's called. And it's just so well written. It's really about having a go at people that have been having a go at him. And it's very cutting, but you know, Bob's lyrics were pretty incredible. Neil Young, oh gee, so many, I love so many of his songs. Sugar Mountain, I love that. Rodriguez, I would play Crucify Your Mind. That's such a great song, and he's such an amazing artist. I met him one time at the Blues Fest in Australia, and I was so excited to meet him. He's fantastic. Another guy that I played with years ago who was supporting me, and was really excited to be supporting me, was Ben Howard. He turned out to be massive, you know, like especially in the UK, he became enormous. Yeah. And we sort of kept in touch for a while. His song,
Alpine.
Ben Howard, Alpine. Such a good song. And he just really sort of
Lift. It was so good to see it because he was such a nice bloke. I didn't really sort of get to know his music when he was supporting me at this festival we were playing. And then I had another friend was playing his music a year or two later going, have you heard of Ben Howard? And I'm like, Ben Howard, it's a guy that supported me. Is it the same guy? So it was. So he was amazing. Fifth artist. I've always been a fan of, go back to Pearl Jam years ago. Pearl Jam, the song Black.
Okay.
So moody. I remember when that was sort of massive, when I was just learning the guitar. And I remember trying to sort of learn. And I think, you know, I think Eddie Vedder's vocals inspired everyone to try and sing like him. Not that my voice is like him, but, you know, I'd go, that song Black is just such a beautiful song.
Pete, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Oh, well, I just want to say thank you to everyone around the world that has supported my music. And, you know, I hope you tune into the new chapter with the my next independent album that I've got coming out. It'll be out in October. So my goal is to try and, you know, these have been sort of stuck to get overseas and play to people, but my goal is to be much more well-known overseas and to do many more shows over there. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.